May it please the Court. Good morning. Ken Carmine for the appellant. Two issues before the Court as I see it. The first is the reversal by the Superior Court of the finding of the Board based on the testimony received that there was inadequate medical opinion or testimony to support the Board's decision. And I think on the first comment I'd like to make is that that sort of misses the point. The question before the Court and before the Superior Court was there sufficient competent evidence in the record to support the Board's finding when all of that evidence is taken into consideration, which is essentially the Freeman case, which is this Court's decision, which sets the benchmark by which the Board is guided. The Board makes decisions and findings as to credibility, and those cannot be disturbed. And once the Board in this case decided that the claimant was credible as to her history as to how this happened, that was the linchpin, ultimately, of their decision. What the Board knew at that time was that although the claimant had had prior back problems about 2 months before the lifting incident she alleged happened, she was working as a CNA and never had undergone any treatment other than an emergency room visit for her back. She went to work like any other day to care for this helpless 5-year-old on December 15th, walked into the school, cared for him all morning, this is what the Board knows happened and found happened, picked him up at lunchtime, and her legs, everything from her waist down, left leg, right leg, went numb, and she felt urinary urgency. This was corroborated by a worker, actually a physical therapy assistant, Mary Leith, who worked at the school and had never seen the claimant as she looked after lunch, which was in obvious distress, limping, dragging her left foot.
Well, what was the specific factual testimony or evidence that the Superior Court used to reverse the award?
Well, the Superior Court's decision is curious. The Superior Court, and I will refer you to the ninth page, indicates that the Board accepted Wyatt's statement that she injured herself while transferring Isaac from his wheelchair to his lunch chair. However, that is not what she told Dr. Venkatarama. And if I may, I'm going to refer to him as Dr. V from here on out. She told him something different. Now, what the Superior Court...
Well, that's correct, isn't that?
Yes. Okay. But what the Superior Court decides is that what Dr. V knew was what she told him on December 17th. At his deposition, what he knew was he knew of her pre-existing condition, and he knew that what she did was lift at work, and he had Dr. Hanley's report, which I handed to him and asked him to review, which went through the history of the lifting of Isaac and how the disc was herniated, and Dr. V's testimony was, I agree with that. So the Superior Court based its decision on what Dr. V knew when he saw the claimant about what she told him and not what he knew at the time of his deposition. What the Board also knew was that Dr. Hanley, who was the defense medical examiner, initially opined when given the history of lifting Isaac that that's what caused the cauda equina and the need for surgery. Dr. Hanley agreed that that's an urgent situation and you have to have immediate care. He was then provided with the, Dr. Hanley was, with the history given to Dr. V by Ms. Wyatt and said, well, now I can't tell you what the cause was. But if you believe that she lifted Isaac and that's when her legs went numb, that's competent to have caused the problem. The Board heard that from Dr. Hanley. The Board heard from Dr. Venkatarama as to the injury, to the fact that lifting would cause that, and to the fact that she did not have it before, she did not have this condition before December 15th because she couldn't have worked with it. And Dr. V testified to that on his deposition. It's in our appendix because I asked him, if this woman had this injury before she went to work on the 15th, could she have done her job? And he said, no. Too much pain, too much numbness, too much weakness. Taken as a whole, this fits the Freeman scenario, I submit, when if the testimony should show even a possibility that the result of the trauma was the work injury, and that such testimony is supplemented by other credible evidence tending to show that the injury occurred directly as a result of the event at work, then that's adequate. And as I say, that was this court's decision in General Motors Corp. versus Freeman.
So your point is, if we take all the evidence as you just summarized it, the fact that she didn't tell Dr. Van Katarama initially that it was a workman's compensation accident because he did not take workman's compensation cases appears to be the Superior Court's basis for setting aside the board's award, but the other evidence as you summarized it, you contend, is substantial evidence on the basis of which it should be affirmed.
Yes, in part. In fact, what Judge Bradley, I think, if you read his opinion as a whole and the conclusion he comes to, is he's essentially, on the one hand, he says Dr. V didn't know about this because she didn't tell him. The board found that that was credible, that she was so scared about her condition that when she found out he didn't take workers' comp, she didn't mention it. By holding the way he did, essentially it seems to me that Judge Bradley is attacking or controverting the board's finding as to the claimant's credibility as to what actually happened on the 15th. And once any weakness in Dr. V's testimony is cured, because once we get to his deposition, the fact scenario that she gave Dr. Handley of lifting Isaac was presented to him.
Was the deposition argument made to Judge Bradley?
Yeah, yes. It was included in the exhibits. And did
he address the deposition in any way?
He doesn't, in his opinion, he only states that Dr. V was not aware, in his opinion, of what really happened to Wyatt on December 15th.
So, I guess but a corollary point you're making is, to the extent she didn't tell Dr. Van Katarama this was work-related, it was true, she didn't tell him it was work-related. But then, based on her other testimony, the board made an assessment on her credibility, and the board concluded it was work-related, and therefore the board's credibility determination should be affirmed.
Well, I think the board's credibility determination with respect to Ms. Wyatt's testimony cannot be attacked on appeal. They have the sole province to determine whether Ms. Wyatt was telling the truth about what actually happened and why she didn't tell Dr. V that on December 17th.
But Dr. V was not a certified medical provider, correct?
That's correct. There's no doubt about that.
And if and the board ultimately denied payment of medical expenses to him?
Yes. It's conceded by my opponent that the first visit is compensable under the statute, but right, the board agreed that he's not certified, so he can't get paid.
So what is the practical consequence of that? Your client bears the full expense, or he waives his fee?
That's correct, and that's the second issue that I tried to address in my brief with respect to emergency care.
Well, he said it was urgent, right?
He said it was urgent. I believe that Dr. Handley actually used the word, it's an emergency situation. But yes, he used the word urgent. But what he said was, when I asked him to explain, is that you have to operate on this sort of injury right away because you never know when you'll hit the point of no return. And that's in the appendix that I've attached. With respect to this much compression on the nerve, it's significant enough to cause loss of ankle jerk, foot drop, loss of bladder control. So,
right. And the board found that this was not emergency care.
Well, what the board found is, if you read the statute, 2322B, it makes an exception with respect to non-certified physicians when it comes to ambulance personnel or emergency room visits or first visit for care. It doesn't go beyond that. I acknowledge that. That's what it says. I would urge the board, however, to consider this. 2322 is a payment statute. It's what it says. 2322D is the certification statute. Neither of them have to do with care, per se. They're not medical statutes. They're payment statutes. And they came about because the legislature was wrestling with the idea that comp was too expensive and how are we going to overhaul the payment system. And as the bill was drafted, it became evident that if you simply said that you can't get paid without pre-authorization if you're not certified, what is some poor injured worker going to do as they're taking him or her to a facility for treatment, finds out it's not certified, and says, wait a minute, take me somewhere else? So the legislature recognized that that's a pretty untenable situation. That first visit's going to get paid for. But after that, treatment needs pre-authorization.
Well, is that the determination that this was not an emergency, is that a factual issue or is it a legal question?
I would say that the difference between urgent and emergency is essentially semantic, particularly in this case. What I'm proposing is that that statute should be read in the spirit of it, which is to take care of somebody that has an urgent or emergency situation, and essentially a doctrine of continuum of emergency or urgent care be established, because Ms. Wyatt sees a physician who, and the doctor testified to this, clinically she had chloroquine. I ordered an MRI just to confirm where the disc was and that I was right. I see her, I order the MRI the same day, we read it the next day, and I put her into surgery the next day. There's never a time when we're not dealing with the urgent or emergency situation. There's no break in that continuum.
Isn't that significantly different from someone who's being taken by ambulance to the hospital after having suffered some kind of trauma and then is being treated in the hospital, starting in the emergency room and moving on to whatever surgery or other procedure is required? That's what this statute seems to be talking about. And urgent, yes, the doctor scheduled it within 2 days. That's pretty good for a neurosurgeon, I suspect. And it means that he gave this priority. He thought it was something that had to be attended to promptly. But it was still a two-day hiatus, whereas if it were truly an emergency, the first time she came in, he could have ordered an ambulance and said, we've got to get you to a hospital, but he didn't. Doesn't that mean that this statute applies, does not apply here?
Well, except that he's the actual final caregiver in this urgent situation. It didn't go from ER to consult to decision to do surgery. It just so happened that she went to the man who could take care of her problem first instead of an ER. And I don't think, what I'm saying is, I think that when the diagnosis is this and we have to operate on a Sunday, 48 hours after I see you, that is essentially within the spirit of the exception to the certification rule, because how are you going to get pre-authorization on a Sunday morning? How are you going to make a call? How long can you wait to get on the phone? And apparently you couldn't wait at all as far as Dr. V was concerned. So there was a continuum of urgent care that I think is in keeping with the spirit of the exception and emergency exception in the statute.
Would you like to reserve the balance of your time?
I would. Thank you.
Good morning again.
Good morning. Linda Wilson here on behalf of the Apelli Rescare Home Care. I would agree with Mr. Carmine that the central issue in this case is with regard to whether there is, well, I'll restate it, from my perspective, whether there is substantial medical evidence in the record to support the board's finding that a lunchtime lifting incident on December the 15th, 2010, was sufficient to cause the medical condition that required surgery on December 19th, 2010. And the Superior Court found that there was not substantial evidence and reversed the board's finding. Now, in the event that this court finds that there was, and I'll also be talking about the secondary issue of medical bills, the petition that's the subject of this appeal was filed by the claimant, and therefore she has the burden of proof. She has to prove every element of her case. She has to prove it by a preponderance of the evidence. The employer doesn't have to provide alternative theories.
Well, your expert was Dr. Hanley, is that correct?
That's correct.
And, you know, Mr. Carmine quoted us part of his testimony where he said, if you believe her representations, that would be the cause of her injuries. Was that accurate?
No, not exactly, and I'll explain why. Dr. Hanley was deposed on two different occasions. There were two different petitions filed in this case giving two different dates of injury. The first time he was deposed and the first time he saw the individual, he didn't have any records. He wasn't sent any relevant records. He had old records and nothing new, and he wasn't provided with a history from the claimant, a relevant history, because everything in this case starts on October 21, 2010, when she injured her back at home. She didn't provide him with that. So he provided some opinions based on that. What his ultimate opinion was and what the board found is that he could not say. He could not say, you know, whether or not that is lifting a competent, can lifting be competent? Yes. Can 100 other things be competent, getting up off the toilet, things, a number of things are. But what his ultimate opinion was that he couldn't say. And furthermore, the board did not accept his opinion. And so from my perspective, that's not the essence of the board's decision. That's not what the board relied on. We're here to look at, is there substantial evidence to support the board's findings?
Well, let's stop there. Dr. V did say that, as far as he's concerned, her injuries were caused by the nature of her work, right?
Correct.
And she testified that it happened at a particular moment when I was lifting someone, and that I didn't tell the doctor because of the workers' comp business. And the board accepted her testimony.
Correct.
So you put the two of those together, don't you have sufficient evidence, since sufficient evidence is a pretty low standard, sufficient evidence to put together those two witnesses and conclude that the incident on December 15th, was it, or December 10th, was the cause of her injury?
I don't think so, and that's why I'm here, Your Honor. The reason
you have to explain why, right, putting those two together is not enough.
Right. And the reason I don't believe so, Your Honor, is because this case identified a specific incident. It said, on this specific day at the specific time, December 15th, I hurt my back. An incident occurred, I hurt my back. And the board held that an incident occurred, and that's not in dispute. There's substantial evidence to find that. But then it's the causal connection, and the claimant has to prove, she has to provide substantial medical evidence. And the standard is the but-for standard. And that's where we're going to have the problem, from my perspective, with this case, from the board's finding. They have to introduce medical testimony that establishes causation to a reasonable degree of medical probability. They attempted to do that. So the board did not accept Dr. Hanley, so I'm going to put him off to the side because they didn't accept that. That's not what they're relying on. The board accepted the testimony of Dr. V, but the problem with Dr. V's testimony is that it is not sufficient evidence to support the board's finding on causation, and here is why. Because he didn't answer that question. He was asked but for this, but he didn't answer it in the way of a specific event. This is a case where they're alleging a specific event. He never said, yes, a specific event, a specific lifting event. He never was given a hypothetical. He never, when Mr. Carmine at his deposition, and the Superior Court was aware of the fact that at the deposition, Mr. Carmine provided Dr. V with a copy of the report that listed a different history. And that's kind of critical, because although Dr. V was aware of that, he didn't rely upon it. He did not say anything about a specific.
Was that the basis of the Superior Court's ruling?
The Superior Court said there was not sufficient, that Dr. V's opinion was not sufficient to support that.
But didn't the Superior Court say not sufficient to support it because, and during the initial visit, he wasn't told it was related to work?
It said because he didn't know. And when I go back and look at the Superior Court decision, I believe it is still, the Superior Court said he didn't know, but in the summary of the case, the Superior Court also said, highlighted, summarized the fact that he was told that. At the hearing, I asked the claimant what history her doctor was relying upon. I said, is he relying on the history that you gave him on December 17th? And she said, yes. And so he's relying on that. He's told about this specific lifting incident, but he doesn't say if that is what happens, if that's what happened in fact, then that is my opinion, that that's what caused her problem. He doesn't say that. And the reason that's important is because this is a person who the day of the lifting incident was in significant pain, was having significant pain. Her problem started October 21st, non-work related, and beginning in December the 9th, she had significant problems. And in fact, when Mr. Carmine said if she had these problems, she wouldn't be able to work, she wasn't working. In the days prior to the lifting incident, she was not working.
Right. Well, I'd like you to help us understand the record so that we can understand your argument. And thus far, it's as I understand your argument, Dr. Van Katarama said this was a work-related injury generally. He didn't relate it to the specific event.
Correct.
And the claimant said it was work-related. She did connect it to the specific event.
Claimant said, on this date, I lifted and my pain went away and I had numbness.
All right. So, okay. So far, that's the record. And the doctor says it was a work-related injury. She talked about what she did at work. And our question is, if you present medical testimony and the medical testimony is it was work-related and the claimant testifies it's work-related, as I understand your argument, it's not substantial evidence because the medical testimony didn't relate it to an individual event. And that in the absence of medical testimony related to a specific event, you can't have substantial evidence.
Correct. He did not say, but for a specific event, specific lifting incident, she would not have needed this surgery, but for a specific lifting event at work. Right. He gave it general. Correct.
Okay. So far, so good. We understand your argument. Now, our question is the basis for the Superior Court's decision, because the Superior Court seems to write, notwithstanding the fact you knew later, Dr. Van Katarama, that there were these work-related events and work-related conduct, you didn't know it when she presented herself to you. Therefore, I'm discounting your testimony. Is that to the effect of what the Superior Court said?
I don't think so exactly. I think the Superior Court said that the board can't find that there is substantial evidence based on this medical testimony when the medical testimony wasn't based on what actually happened. I think.
Well, we're talking about, and that's a very good way to state it because that helps me ask you a clarifying question. What we're talking about initially is treatment. We have a woman presenting herself with whatever her condition was, and he gets the film back and he says, we need to operate tomorrow. So the question is, did she have a condition that required treatment? And she never told him, I've got this condition because of work. She admits she didn't want to tell him she had it because of work. So the treatment goes forward based on the condition indicated on the film. Then later, he finds out what was going on at work, and he says it's a work-related injury. Aren't those two separate inquiries? Did she need treatment immediately, and what was the cause of the need for the treatment?
Well, she needed treatment, but she needed, I mean, she was having problems before the lifting incident, and that's the essence of it. Dr. V's opinion is insufficient to say what that treatment's related to, because he didn't talk about, he didn't say she would have needed the surgery but for this lifting incident. He didn't say that. And she was having significant problems just prior to that. And that's why his testimony is insufficient, because he doesn't deal with that at all.
Let me read. This is from the trial court's opinion. Dr. V's opinion was that, quote, the type of work she does caused the herniated disc, which brought her to me and that needed surgery, end quote.
That is his general opinion. Dr. V gives a, what he says is, my impression was that the type of work she does caused the herniated disc, which brought her to me. But he never said, because of an event that happened on this date or because of a specific event. She was having problems beforehand. And yes, he didn't relate it. The board found that there was a specific lifting incident, but he didn't relate the need for the surgery to a specific lifting incident. The woman needed treatment. She was having problems
before.
Couldn't
the board infer that, given the fact that she had this incident, and wasn't it that day or the next day that she went to Dr. V? I believe it was almost immediately.
She went to him 2 days later.
Okay.
I don't think the board can infer that. I think that the claimant has to prove her case.
Well, she says that these new symptoms came on after the particular incident of lifting the person, right?
She said the numbness came on after lifting the incident, correct.
Okay. So there's evidence. It's not medical evidence, but there's evidence that there was a specific incident at work that resulted in certain symptoms that she then sought treatment for. And the doctor she goes to within a day or two says, yes, this is related to her work. Can't the board put those two things together and say the doctor's opinion supports her testimony that this injury was caused by this incident, even though the doctor didn't say it was this particular incident?
No, because the doctor didn't have all the information, or he had wrong information. One of the things that is discussed in this case a lot is her urinary incontinence, which happened later, not immediately upon the lifting incident, but later. But what the board did find, that has no there's no evidence in the record to support it, What the board did find is that immediately after lifting, she had urinary urgency. And I looked at the claimant's testimony, and she is not claiming urinary urgency. Mr. Carmine asked her after immediately upon lifting. The board found she had urinary urgency immediately after lifting. Mr. Carmine asked her at the end of the school day, what symptoms were you having? She had, I had no pain. I had numbness down the back of my legs. My buttocks was numb. The perineal area was numb. And then that's pretty much it. And Dr. V, the only medical expert whose testimony has been accepted in this case, did not say that she had urinary urgency. So claimant's not claiming she had urinary urgency, but yet the board found it. The only time that claimant talks about urinary urgency was after she had the surgery. And there is a discussion about loss of bladder control later, but that's not immediately. And she was having a problem. She wasn't able to work in the days before. She was having significant problems before she ever went to work that day. And she did not have
this. Let's assume the board made a mistake on that particular factual issue. Does that require a reversal?
Well, but it shows that Dr. V, the expert whose opinion has been relied upon, is his opinion is without foundation. He didn't know a significant relevant fact. If the board found that and he didn't know that, also, other facts he didn't know that would cause his opinion to be without foundation. He testified that it was her problems immediately before the lifting incident, the ones that began on December the 9th. He testified that she had significant severe pain in her left lower extremity. So in his opinion, he's relying on that. That's how he's seeing her case, and those are facts that he's relying upon to get to whatever his opinions are. She said to the board, that's not true. I had no symptoms in my lower extremity prior to the lifting incident.
Well, let me give you a hypothetical. A person comes into the doctor's office and has, unfortunately, a bone sticking out of their leg where they, after they had fallen down. Does the doctor necessarily have to get a complete history if there is immediate and verifiable evidence that there is a broken bone here? And if that situation would be sufficient for a doctor to opine that you broke your leg as a result of falling off the ladder at work, then why can't this doctor opine after looking at her MRI that you have the herniated disc because of your work?
Well, the herniated disc could have been caused by what she was, what was going on before, the reason she was out of work the day before the lifting incident. It's different than a bone sticking out, which is pretty obvious. It's an internal condition. That's why we needed the medical expert's opinions.
And that's why he took an MRI, and that gave him the medical evidence of what her condition was.
But whatever her condition was, the only thing, the board found that claimant was credible, the board found that she had a lifting incident and that her symptoms changed to go from pain to numbness. But she was having symptoms before, and Dr. V did not explain. They're relying on him, and he didn't say anything about how it wasn't the problem before, how that's not what caused what was seen on the MRI.
Did you ask Dr. Van Katarama?
I didn't hear you, I'm sorry.
Did you ask Dr. Van Katarama if he knew she was out of work the day before the incident?
I did not participate in that deposition. I'm trying to remember if he, one moment please. I think he was aware of that. But he wasn't aware initially of a specific lifting event. And it's not clear that he was aware, and why she was out beforehand, it's not clear. He might have assumed that because of the lack of information in his opinion, that the reason she was out of work in those days prior to was work-related, but it's not been determined. It's not been accepted or determined okay. That it was a work-related reason.
Well, here's what we need the ultimate help with, and that is, what rule of law are you asking us to pronounce? Because we have a lot of law that talks about if you present medical testimony and you present the claimant's testimony and there are these disagreements that you're identifying and the board's aware of the disagreements and the board resolves a credibility dispute in favor of the claimant, that's substantial evidence to support the board's decision. What's the precedent you want us to announce in this case that we can apply consistently with all the cases we've already decided?
I think it's consistent with the cases that are out there that require foundation for the medical expert's opinion. And Dr. V offered two things, that his opinion lacked foundation. He didn't know critical facts. He didn't know about...
At the time of his deposition.
Correct. Because he was deposed and he wasn't at the hearing. And at the hearing, the claimant is saying, I didn't have any left lower extremity problems until the lifting incident. That's not what Dr. V believed. He thought she had severe pain in her left lower extremity prior to. He also thought that the day of what has been determined to be the day of the lifting incident, he thought she was numb in the morning and she had no back pain, but she testified before the board that she had back pain that morning, significant back pain, where she was trying not, you know, didn't want to go to work but thought she had to. So he's without foundation there. It lacks the what is necessary on the but-for standard, because he never says, he was asked the question but-for this, but he doesn't say yes, and I, having deposed so many, as many doctors as I have, I see that he rephrased it. He reframed the question. He didn't say yes, but for the, you know, she would have needed the surgery but for. He kind of rephrased it in a, well, let me make it sound like it's related in a general way. But that's not what this case is about. This case is about they are alleging on a specific occasion there was a specific event. So his testimony is insufficient. To support the board's finding on causation, the evidence has to be not just some evidence, it has to be substantial evidence. And his opinion doesn't rise to that standard because, one, he doesn't change his opinion. He had the history from claimant And that's the history he relied on, and he never gave anything, he never said anything about a specific event caused this.
Why did you just say it has to be substantial evidence, it can't be just some evidence? Is that how we've defined substantial evidence?
Yes, the some evidence or any evidence may be insufficient to support the factual findings of the board. The evidence must be substantial.
But substantial evidence isn't that sufficient evidence which would allow someone to conclude it? And it can be any evidence.
Yes, and the Superior Court found that it wasn't because he never offered an opinion about a specific event. The claim is about a specific event, an identifiable accident, and Dr. V never said. Because the question could have been asked hypothetically, like the question was asked in Freeman, if this happened, would that be sufficient? And he wasn't asked that. He just kind of gave a general, yeah, her lifting. Well, what does that mean? That the degenerative disc she had, I mean, she had a lot of problems, and she had non-work-related problems, and he didn't talk about that. And so for two reasons, he never answered that question. But for specific incident, he never gave that opinion. That's the problem. And then his opinion is lacks foundation because he's missing critical facts.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You have about 5.5 minutes.
Thank you. I think the court in this case has to consider the law with respect to the board's purview. The Freeman case sets it out about as well as any case that I've read in talking about sufficient evidence. First of all, we have a panel which has a certain level of expertise in these matters. And the Freeman case says you need expert testimony, and without it, causation cannot stand. But this does not mean in every case the testimony of medical experts must show a probability that the injury was caused by trauma. If the testimony of the experts should show that there's a possibility that it's trauma-related, if that's supplemented by other credible evidence tending to show the injury occurred directly after the trauma without an eruption, we think that evidence would be sufficient. Dr. V did know that when she came to see him on December 17th, she had had loss of bladder control since the 16th, and that she had never had that before. In fact, his testimony is she had to use a bag. That's word for word. The symptoms, to the extent that she had pain, he was aware of that, but it wasn't the numbness. This is the difference. When the cauda equina, the horse's tail syndrome occurs, there is such compression on the nerve that you don't have pain, you just don't have any feeling. You don't have a reflex. The ankle reflex disappears. The foot drops. Dr. V knew all those things were not there before the day before she came to see him. Now, is his answer as artfully drafted or artfully stated as I would have liked, that the lifting at work is the what she does at work was the cause of this herniation? No. But I did ask him to look at Dr. Hanley's, the history given to Dr. Hanley, and look at Dr. Hanley's report. And he agreed that, yes, I agree with Hanley that if that's what happened, then that would be a causal connection. And what
Ms. Wilson, one of her arguments was that at the actual hearing where Dr. V was not present and did not testify, that your client contradicted the history that Dr. V relied upon. She was referring to the incontinence, I believe.
Well, I think at the, I'm sorry.
Is that correct?
As I recall,
what do we do with that?
Well, as I recall at the hearing, she testified that she was dragging her foot, she was numb from the waist down, and she couldn't think of any other symptoms at the time. But that evening, she started to have a sense of urgency, and that was the 15th, which was a Wednesday, by the 16th, the Thursday, she couldn't contain her urine. And so
Well, did she contradict the history that Dr. V relied upon or not?
I do not believe that she contradicted it. Dr. V understood that when he saw her on December 17th, she was suffering from symptoms that before the 15th she had not previously had, i.e. numbness, not pain, but numbness, and loss of urgency. And I don't think as you read Dr. V's testimony, it would have made a difference whether she had that immediately or later that night. On top of which, while they rejected Dr. Hanley's ultimate conclusion, which is, I really can't tell because I've got two different stories, so I'm not going to pinpoint causation. The board heard his testimony, which was, if she did lift the child on the 15th, as she told you, and suffered an increase in symptoms resulting in urgency, actual loss of bladder control that night, would be the cause of the herniation? Possibly, like I say, it doesn't have quite the immediacy she described in March. I know, doctor, for the purposes of the question, answer, it cuts me off. I think I've already said that. I think I said in my October 18 report that if indeed she did what she said, then that would serve as a basis for causal relationship. Now, Ms. Wilson's argument is that they rejected Dr. Hanley. Well, they rejected his ultimate conclusion. His ultimate conclusion was, I'm not going to pick sides because I've got two different histories, the one she gave Dr. V and the one she gave me. But he testified that if what she said was true, that's the causal connection for the herniation that needed the surgery.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you both. The court will take this matter under advisement and recess.